You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This 2021 season is full of high rollers with deep pockets who will let it ride. Football 21, a game of blackjack.
Here is a kick. It's got the distance. It's got the distance. And it is good!
Will the future Hall of Famers still be aces?
Rodgers in the shotgun, takes the snap, lofts it over the right side. Devontae, over the shoulder, catch, got it!
Can fresh-faced upstarts beat the house?
They're in victory formation, and Baker Mayfield takes a knee. The Browns are going to the playoffs.
Which of the college football contenders will be dealt a stiff hand?
It'll start with a throw. Rattler deep drop.
Takes a shot for Mims behind the defense. Got him! Touchdown! Painter! Marvelous!
For the 21 season, we're doubling down.
This is starting to become very, very real.
It's Sunday Morning Football with your host, D.A., only on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Well, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us on this edition of Sunday Morning Football. Each and every weekend, Sunday morning comes to you 10 until noon Eastern Time here on CBS Sports Radio, 7 until 9 Pacific. And we come to you live from Boise, Idaho, from the KTIK The Ticket Studios, where I've been broadcasting all week long. I'll continue tomorrow morning on my show, 6 until 10 Eastern Time here on CBS Sports Radio, and then back from the New York City CBS Sports Radio studios on Tuesday morning. Coming up this hour here on the show, Larry Hartstein is going to join us, our Vegas virtuoso. We'll talk to Larry about some lines across today's NFL landscape and some numbers you want to dig into if you're interested in sprinkling a little chicken seed on today's NFL week number 2. And also later on in the hour, we'll look inside Daniel Jones at another near miss for the New York Giants, the Green Bay Packers, who need to try to rebound after a disastrous effort last weekend against the Saints, and then also a young quarterback for the Jets trying to build his franchise QB reputation up so the confidence can flow through that Jets organization. That's all coming up this morning right here on Sunday Morning Football. You can tweet at me, again, DA on CBS. Follow me and tweet at me, DA on CBS. And if you're on Instagram, follow me there as well. I've been documenting my trip here in Idaho, in Boise. What an amazing couple of days it has been. Last night, got to go to Albertson Stadium on the blue turf and watch Oklahoma State versus Boise State. So follow me on Instagram, at Damon Amendo. You can check out not only pictures of the week that's been at the stadium, at all of our shows, and also last night of the blue turf, but also my enormous week that's included a trip to the Hell's Canyon portion of Idaho, the Snake River, and going out fishing for sturgeon. Yes, not a football topic, but a sportsman's topic, certainly. Follow me there on Instagram for all of the images, the video, etc. My photo journal of the week, at Damon Amendo. Well, last night, this one was a biggie for this program here in Boise. The Broncos don't oftentimes get Power 5 programs to come to Boise, Idaho, and play on the blue turf. Obviously, they've built themselves into one of the best group of five programs in America, with designs on a college football playoff party plundering, at the very least, try to get into a New Year's Six bowl game. 3 Fiesta Bowl championships dot the halls of Boise State Broncos football. And last night was a chance for a Power 5 program on their turf to send another message. And early it looked like they were going to do exactly that, leading early, dominating the Oklahoma State Cowboys early, and putting the Big 12 on watch. And instead, by the end of this game, yet another heartbreaking loss for the Broncos. Let's start things up this hour with Coming In Hot.
2-1, you've got a pair of bogeys. 12 o'clock.
30 plus years of service. Only man to shoot down 3 enemy planes in the last 40 years.
Attention, air control. Someone tell DA he's coming in hot.
The end is inevitable, Maverick. You're kind of headed for extinction.
Maybe so, sir. But not today.
We will start on the blue turf here, because why not discuss exactly what was going on last night? And last night, you know, for Boise State, it's just an absolutely brutal loss. By the end of the game, they could not get off of the field when they needed to and get their offense back on. The offense under Andy Avalos really went to bed in week number one against UCF on the road, had a big lead, blew it, 21-point lead. And last night was kind of shades of the same thing. And the rest didn't do Boise State any favors. There is a fumble return for a touchdown late that would have given Boise State a fourth quarter lead. It was blown dead. It was down. They didn't realize it was a fumble. They went back and reviewed it. They gave Boise State the football, but they did not give them the touchdown. And that really was a crucial turning point in that game. Again, you can't hope that the refs save you, and there were plenty of chances the rest of the way to get it done as well for Boise State, but that one was an absolute killer decision-wise from the officials. And then also, you have a field goal at the very least late in this game that you're lining up for, assuming that that is going to give you the lead and perhaps the win, and the field goal, which is a chip shot, ends up pseudo block, fingertip on it, and then it ends 21-20, no good. For Boise State, Henk Bachmeyer was rough to watch in the second half. He was a guy that frankly throws a bad interception late in that game that is a backbreaker as well. And Oklahoma State didn't even have to throw the football. Spencer Sanders threw for a total of 82 yards last night. But Okie State's ground game, led by Jaylen Warren, was the difference. He had 32 carries for 218, two touchdowns, and a 75-yarder. Boise State didn't get many chances, like I said. You've got to capitalize on those Power 5 program opportunities when you get them. And now, for the first time in a long time, they're under 500. For the first time in a long time, they got two losses in September. So just a back-breaking type of loss last night, where you lead that game 20-7 and lose 21-20, and nobody scores in the second half. And a turnover at the end of the first half, the end of the second quarter, was also just gut-wrenching for Boise State. They're going to look back on last night's game and rue all of the missed opportunities they had. Just a crushing loss for Boise State. And a Oklahoma State win that suggests, you know what, maybe they just have to run the football, and that's going to be enough. Meantime, in the Big Ten, Ohio State and Nebraska were locked in a tight one. And that was surprising, because most people would have figured it was going to be OSU in an easy victory. Not exactly how it went and how they drew it up yesterday. Here's the call.
Snap to Stroud, feeds Henderson, running straight up the middle of the 50, left angle of the Tulsa 40 goes Henderson, wider to the left of the Tulsa 30, to the 20 goes Henderson, to the 10, to the 5, to the end zone. Touchdown, Travion Henderson, 52 yards.
Great to see the defense come up with that big sack, and Cam to get the interception at the end of the game. I thought they battled throughout the game, but still a lot of things to work on both sides of the ball. It was great to get the run game going today on offense. That was something that was a huge emphasis going into this game, and then also stopping the run on defense.
And that was Ohio State over Tulsa, 41-20, my mistake. And that was Paul Keels on the Ohio State Radio Network and Ryan Day after the victory. We were talking last hour about just how some of the big boys of college football have not looked themselves this year, and Clemson with a rough outing yesterday. That offense looks terrible. Also, we saw an Alabama team look vulnerable, certainly defensively, not nearly as stout as we would have thought coming into the season. Oklahoma, Ohio State now has a loss as well on the season after the Ducks win last weekend. So could be some new faces in college football's playoff. Now, meantime, last night there was a whiteout in Happy Valley. Penn State and Auburn. And here it is, fourth and goal in the fourth quarter. Penn State trying to hold on to the lead.
Clifford waits, takes it, gives it to Kane. Noah Kane, touchdown Penn State. The Nittany Lions cross them up and take it to the house. Decibel level rising. Back goes Nix. Lobs far corner. Bodies go down. Incomplete. Penn State does it again. They hold.
A lot of positives, you know, coming out of there. I thought we played really good complimentary football. Offense scored enough points to win and created some explosive plays. I think we can be a little bit more efficient in the running game. I think we can improve there. Overall, it's a great win, but we'll enjoy it for a little bit. Then we'll get up in the morning and start all over.
Steve Jones on Learfield IMG College. That is James Franklin after the 28-20 victory by Penn State in the whiteout game in Happy Valley last night. Huge win by Penn State. I think what you saw was Sean Clifford finally growing up into the quarterback that so many Nittany Lions fans have wanted to see him be over the course of his career. 28 of 32 last night, 280 yards, two touchdowns, one INT, and Penn State does enough to get the win, get into the end zone four times. That was an important win for that program. That was an important effort from the quarterback. That was the type of win that Penn State fans have been hoping for in a season that, now that you see Ohio State look a little vulnerable, maybe Penn State is the team to beat in the Big Ten. Really like the effort. Really got the big victory last night for Penn State. And that is, to me, one of those reasons why James Franklin is so interesting and enticing for USC. Because, yes, he has yet to win that college football playoff and that championship, but he always has Penn State in and around the top 15, the top 10. This year could be the breakthrough for the Nittany Lions, and that's a big boy win last night. Good effort from Auburn, not enough. Nittany Lions get the 28-20 win. And finally, in the NFL on Monday Night Football, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens blow a two-touchdown lead and fall to 0-1. And today, tonight, they got to go to Kansas City to take on the Chiefs.
He's got Renfro is to his left, and Zay Jones.
Here they come.
And here they come. Blitz is picked up. Jones is open. Jackpot, baby! Vegas touchdown. This time, no doubt. Put it in the W column, baby. This one's over.
It's not about, you know, me and Mahomes, not to me, you know, probably to everyone else, but, you know, it's the Ravens versus the Kansas City Chiefs. They did beat us, you know, three times or whatever, but that's in the past. We you know, we got a better opportunity this time to come around, and we take the advantage and win at our home stadium. But I'm not dwelling on those losses. You know, we come a Sunday night, and we're going to play.
Brett Musburger on Raiders Radio. Lamar Jackson after the loss. This is a huge one for the Ravens. It's not a program. It's not an organization used to falling to 0-2. But this is a really tough matchup. And I know that Lamar Jackson said it's not about him versus Patrick Mahomes. But it's hard not to make it like that because they're two MVP caliber players. And Lamar still hasn't found a way to beat the Chiefs. I don't think it's going to happen again tonight. I think the Chiefs end up winning this football game. We saw last week a Chiefs team that flipped the switch and went into turbo as soon as they needed to. And with a Ravens squad that is desperate for help in the running back position because of all the injuries, they got a pretty decent effort last week, but can you do it again? And how much effort does Lamar Jackson have to give, both running and throwing? I think a huge, huge, huge part, because the Ravens defense is not going to be able to completely shut down the Chiefs. So there's a lot of pressure tonight on Lamar Jackson, and a lot of pressure, I think, from John Harbaugh and also that organization to find a way to win. Because if you lose again to the Chiefs, it's once again going to be the kryptonite that the Ravens can be good, but the yeah, but. And they can get into the postseason, and you'll say, yeah, but if they run into the Chiefs, they're going to lose ultimately. You can't drop to 0-4 against the same team and still have that confidence going into the playoffs that you'll be able to get it done. So a huge game at Arrowhead tonight on Sunday Night Football, and Lamar Jackson is underneath that spotlight and that glare. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, Larry Hartstein's going to join us, our Vegas virtuoso this morning. Let's look ahead to all of the lines of today's NFL action to give you some thoughts from a Vegas Sharps perspective. This is Sunday Morning Football, DA with you, here on CBS Sports Radio.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Winners, whiners, wise guys. Every week we scour the NFL odds to see where you should plunk down your scratch.
Place your bets.
Sunday Morning Football, making wagering fun again.
You win. So glad you're with us here on Sunday Morning Football. Damon Amendolara, DA with you each and every week right here on CBS Sports Radio. Also heard on SiriusXM Channel 206. And stream us as well. You can listen to us on your Odyssey app on your phone or to the CBS Sports app as well. Both are free. We're trying to outfox Vegas and look at the lines each and every week. Joining us this morning here on the show is Sportsline senior analyst and CBS Sports HQ's analyst as well, Larry Hartstein. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, DA. Let's do it.
Let's do it, right? Okay, let's look at week number two of the NFL. Last week, we saw the Baltimore Ravens on Monday Night Football blow that lead against the Raiders, and tonight is going to be no much easier as they actually get the Chiefs at home. Not at Arrowhead, as I said earlier in the morning, but they do get them at home. Either way, though, the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite in this game. What do you think that you can carry from Monday night, how the Ravens can find a way to engineer a victory tonight?
Well, when you look at the injury report, you look at the Chiefs, there's nobody on it. That's unbelievable. In the NFL, Frank Clark will be back. The Honey Badger will be back. And it's such a different story on the other side for the Ravens. I mean, you lose Ronnie Stanley after all the other injuries. And I just think it's such a bad matchup. We've seen it time again where they blitz Patrick Mahomes, and you can't blitz Patrick Mahomes. He's 3-0. The passer rating is 116 going up against the Ravens. We're seeing this line tick up to 4 in a lot of spots. I laid it at 3.5. You know, the Ravens are not going to lie down on their home field for sure, and they have been great in the underdog role. And the Chiefs have been terrible covering spreads, 2-10 against the number, after not covering again against the Browns last week. But I just think the matchup, the injury report, all favors KC.
One number in this game that I really like is, if you can get it, the over-under on rushes by Lamar Jackson. Saw it earlier the week at 10.5. Last week on Monday night, he rushed 12 times against the Raiders. If you can find that at 10.5, do you take the over on Lamar Jackson's rushes on 10.5?
Yeah, I like that. You know, Tyson Williams had that one great run where he broke through on a 4th-and-1 for a 35-yard run. Besides that, didn't do a whole lot. Latavius Murray, you know, steady. He's not explosive. Lamar's going to have to do it all for the Ravens to stay in this one. So I like that.
Texans and Browns today. It is so wild to look at the lines and see the Cleveland Browns favored by double digits against anybody. And in this game, they're at home against the Texans 13.5-point favorites. Now, this is interesting. You know, Browns obviously lost last week to the Chiefs. The Texans also looked okay against the Jacksonville Jaguars. What do you make of a nearly 2-touchdown spread, which is rare in the NFL in general, but also for an 0-1 team to be favored by 2 touchdowns?
Yeah, you know, D.A., you bring me on here, and I'm supposed to have strong opinions on every game, and this is one that I really don't know what to do with. I mean, we've seen the line tick up based on the fact that the Browns did look amazing against the Chiefs, even though they didn't win the game. And the Texans, you know, people are thinking that's kind of an outlier, and they didn't realize how bad the Jets are. But, you know, Tyrod Taylor plays, you know, conservative. He doesn't put the ball in jeopardy. The one angle I might look at is the over. This ref actually is 21-7 to the over, and the lead ref, he was also on the 49ers-Lions game, which produced, I believe, 74 points.
Interesting. How about this, Bills and Dolphins? You know, we talked about this in hour number one. If the Bills fall on the road in Miami today, they fall to 0-2. The Dolphins move to 2-0. So that's already a pretty big spread of that division. And then, of course, you'd have the head-to-head that you would have lost to the Miami Dolphins. But the Bills are favored in this game by 3.5. Going on the road in September has oftentimes been tough for a lot of AFC East teams in sweltering Miami. What do you think, what do you make of the Bills being favored by 3.5? That hook is so interesting. That half point here is so interesting on this line.
Yeah, that hook is huge. I would lean towards the Bulls, towards the Bills at 3, just because Josh Allen loves against his defense, and he always excels, and they just don't defend him the way that I think they should. And the Dolphins, very fortunate to get that win. Yes, you know, they went up and beat the Patriots, but, you know, we all know the fumble that the Patriots probably should have won the game. So I would lean to the Bills at 3, but at 3.5, I'm probably staying away.
Okay. Larry Hartstein joins us, CBS Sports Lines analyst, as we discuss the line today from the NFL world. Let's look at that Patriots team that you just mentioned. The Patriots are on the road against the Jets. Pats lose week number one. They're 0-1. So are the Jets at 0-1. The Patriots are a pretty big favorite on the road of this game, favored by 6. What do you make of the Patriots laying 6 points on the road despite losing week number one?
I think completely justified. I jumped on it early in the week at -4. Anyone who follows me at Sportsline saw that, and I'm thrilled to see the line value I'm getting, but I still like the Patriots because, you know, you look at the Jets, and the offensive line was bad even before Becton went out, and they got 35 or 40% of their offense on the last meaningless drive of the game. So let's not think that they really found something. That game was over. And the Panthers were just playing prevent defense, and the Jets finally moved the ball. So I just think the Patriots, you know, should be 1-0, getting a little bit of line value here. We all know how Bill Belichick does against young quarterbacks. I think they're going to run the ball. I think, you know, Mac Jones looked phenomenal in week one. I definitely on the Patriots.
How about Niners and Eagles? We always know that a West Coast team traveling to the East Coast, playing that early window, is a tough go at it. Niners against the Eagles in that early window, 1 p.m. Eastern kick, and the Niners still are favored by 3 points on the road, traveling cross country against an Eagles team that frankly surprised most of us with how well they played against the Falcons. Now, maybe that's because Atlanta's really bad, but the Eagles did look good under Nick Sirianni in his first game at the helm. Do you think the Niners win this game by more than a field goal, knowing that, again, it's an early kick for a West Coast team?
Well, they did stay east, which is always a smart move, and they have actually historically done well in this spot, playing 2 games, you know, on the eastern half of the country back-to-back. I believe last year they took care of the Giants and the Jets back-to-back. These teams are a little bit better, obviously, with the Eagles. And the Eagles look great. The D-line looked amazing. And some of the Niners' injuries are very worrisome. But I just think at 3, it's worth a lean on the 49ers. I'm going to take – I really do think the Eagles are improved. But I'm going to say that was more about how bad the Falcons are than about how good Jalen Hurts is.
Larry Hartstein joins us this morning looking at the NFL lines. We were just talking about the Raiders and their comeback victory, which was a big one on Monday night against Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Today, they're in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. The Steelers are a nearly 7-point, nearly touchdown favorite, rather. They're favored by 6 or 6.5 some places. You know, do you think the Steelers are legitimately as good as they showed in week number one, or was that more of a case of maybe surprising the Bills, the Bills not being ready to go? Do they deserve to be a 6-point favorite in this game against the Raiders today?
Not at all. I mean, it's a terrible spot for the Raiders. The, you know, emotional overtime win and then traveling east for an early start. And we know how Jon Gruden hates to fly, and 15-25 against the spread after an underdog outright win. But I just don't think the Steelers offense deserves to be favored by this much. They blocked a punt for a touchdown last week. I think they're going to need to do something similar to cover this number. That O-line is just as bad this year as it was last year. You know, Najee Harris only had 45 yards. About 30 of them came after contact. There was no room to run whatsoever. And I think Gus Bradley is improving the Raiders' defense. I know they gave up 27 points, but that's to a very explosive Lamar Jackson team. I think this defense is better. We saw what Max Crosby did. So I would take the Raiders to be competitive, even though it's such a tough spot for them off of that short week.
I want to know what you think about the Titans, because I was high on the Titans coming into this season. They were at home last week against Arizona, and they really no-showed. They were terrible, couldn't block Chandler Jones. Ryan Tannehill was awful. Derrick Henry couldn't get going as well, and it really made me rethink, boy, should I have been so optimistic on the Titans? Maybe it's just 1 week, but today they're in Seattle, which is a brutal place to play for any road team, but certainly one coming off such an awful effort last Sunday. Do you think the Titans are frauds? Today they have to face a six-point line here. The Seahawks are favored by 6 at home.
I wouldn't go as far as calling them frauds. I think they'll get it together and finish around 500. But we did see some very disturbing signs last week. No play action, as everyone has already pointed out. Without Arthur Smith, they didn't do any play action, which really hurt Ryan Tannehill. But on the Seattle side, I think this Shane Waldron romance with Russell Wilson is a real thing. I mean, that offense looked unbelievable against a very good Colts defense. I think people are kind of discounting that the Colts have, they do have a good defense. And even without Xavier Rhodes, what they were doing, marching up and down the field, the explosive plays. I just love what Waldron is doing. I think Russell Wilson, again, in September, is going to explode like he has for the last several years. And if I had to play it, I would definitely lay the point.
Finally, is there a number out there that you like today? Could be a line, could be a total, could be a prop that you circled and said, boy, you know what? That's one that really makes sense for me today. Is there anything that you circled?
Yeah, I'll put a couple of those together in the same game, and that's playing against the Jacksonville Jaguars and Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence, who threw 3 interceptions against what very well could be the worst pass defense in all of football in the Texans, and now is facing a Broncos defense and Vic Fangio, and we know how Teddy Bridgewater takes care of the ball, 22-3 against the spread on the road as a starter. So I love the Broncos, even laying all these points. And I also love K.J. Hamler to go over 34.5 yards. We saw him drop a 50-yard touchdown. He has been working hard, taking, I think he had hundreds of over-the-shoulder passes in practice. And without Jerry Jeudy, his role is going to be increased. He went over this number last week already, even with that big drop. So K.J. Hamler over 34.5, Broncos to cover.
If you want to check out Sportsline's complete coverage of today's NFL Week Number 2 predictions, best bets, and player props, including Larry, check it out on YouTube. They just did that earlier this morning. It's excellent stuff. Go to YouTube and check out the live stream of it. Of course, it's now. It's been archived, but it's called the Early Edge. Check it out. They do a great job giving you all the information you need going into today's NFL action, courtesy of Sportsline with their best bets and the Early Edge. Also, you can follow Larry on Twitter as well for those conversations, the data points, and the intel at Larry Hartstein. Larry, it's always great to catch up, my man. Thanks so much for doing it this morning. We'll definitely catch up again this season.
Sounds good, DA. Talk to you soon.
You too. Larry Hartstein, our Vegas virtuoso. More on today's NFL Week Number 2 here on Sunday Morning Football when we come back, including a pair of young QBs in New York that have big question marks surrounding them. But first up, we've got your headlines. Standing by, here's Kevin Dexter.
CBS Television Sports presents the National Football League.
You're locked in to Sunday Morning Football on CBS Sports Radio with your host, D.A. We ask those who are in the game for their thoughts on the game.
Congratulations, man. That's helpful.
It's time for The Insiders.
I'll knock you out.
So glad you're with us here on Sunday Morning Football. We lead you into week number two of the NFL season. Damon Amendolara, DA with you each and every week here on CBS Sports Radio, 10 until noon Eastern Time, 7 until 9 Pacific. We begin with Trent Dilfer, who of course won the Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens 20-some-odd years ago now, 21 years ago. The Super Bowl 35 win by the Baltimore Ravens, the first in their franchise's history. Of course, they had become the Ravens a few years earlier, having the Cleveland Browns move to Baltimore and become the Ravens. But that defense was elite. Now, Trent Dilfer was maybe a game manager for that championship team, but he certainly has become one of the most interesting NFL and quarterback analysts out there. And so I asked him this week on my show about Daniel Jones leading into that Thursday night game against Washington. And I was surprised, coming off of the week one dreadful effort by the Giants, Daniel Jones, that Trent Dilfer was still very, very high on Daniel Jones. Now, this was before Thursday night's effort from Jones. Here's how high Dilfer still is on the young QB.
I see the toughness. I see the grit. I see the resilience. I see enough talent. I see all the intangible stuff that's going to allow him to survive what is going to be a horrific narrative of him giving games away. And we both know how narratives go in the NFL. Perception becomes reality. Narratives become the focal point, the headliners. And he's going to have to get through this turnover thing. And he will, because I think he's the right kind of kid. And when he does, and I don't think it's an if, I think it's a win. When he does, and as they get more talented up front, they got to get better up front. When those things happen, and I think this is probably a next year thing, to be honest with you. You'll see flashes of it this year. But when he does, I think he's going to be one of the better players in the NFL. I don't think he's going to be a flash and sizzle guy all the time. I think he's going to grow into one of these great quarterbacks that makes everybody around him better because what he's gone through, what he's endured, what he's had to fight through, and his team's going to be like, listen, if that guy can do it, we can do it.
Very high praise from Trent Dilfer on young Daniel Jones with the Giants. Now, there's not going to be many excuses left for Daniel Jones if the Giants don't turn this thing around. And they're 0-2 after that heartbreaking defeat at the hands of Washington with the last-second field goal on Thursday. And Daniel Jones, by and large, on Thursday night, played pretty well. He did. He played pretty well and probably deserved a better outcome. Dexter Lawrence jumping off sides, lining up off sides, what have you, on that final field goal, which ended up being no good by Washington. They reset the kick, 5 yards shorter. They end up making that. That's how the Giants lose. Also a drop of the end zone by Darius Slayton on the bomb from Daniel Jones. So there were reasons to come out of Thursday night and feel as though Jones perhaps was starting to put it together. But the turnovers are so killer from Daniel Jones, and the wins aren't there. I mean, this is an offense with two top 10 picks at quarterback and running back, and now they spent all the money on Kenny Golladay, and they've improved the offensive line, that frankly it's kind of hard to still make excuses for Daniel Jones. You've got to equate to winning. You're a top 10 pick at quarterback. You're in year number three. You have a running back who was drafted number two overall, and when he's healthy, been one of the best running backs in football. You have a potential number one receiver. I don't really view Golladay as such, but they paid him as such. A talented tight end in Evan Ingram, an improved offensive line. You got to equate to wins. That has to be a win for the Giants on Thursday, or else it's always what we could be instead of what we actually are. I thought it was interesting that Trent Dilfer was so high on Jones, because I'm not as high on him. I don't think he'll ever become a great QB. I don't think he'll ever become one of the best players in the NFL, as Trent said. But Trent studied a lot of film. He's seen a lot of quarterbacks. He's played the position. He's won a Super Bowl. So high praise from Dilfer. And Jones seemed to prove Dilfer right on Thursdays many ways. But ultimately, you're judged as a QB on your wins and losses. And Jones just doesn't have enough of those. We had Tyler Dunn on the show as well earlier in the week. Now, Tyler has
cover the NFL for many, many years for multiple publications. He currently is the editor and creator of GoLongTD.com, an NFL-centric newsletter, but he also covered the Packers for years on a local level on the Packers beat. And so coming off of last week's disaster against the New Orleans Saints and Jacksonville, I asked Ty Dunn, you know, do you think it's going to be difficult for the Packers to break out of the funk after just how awful they played last Sunday? Here he is.
Especially after this offseason when he was publicly embarrassing the franchise. He wanted to punish them for the sin of drafting Jordan Love the year before. It's no coincidence the bombshell dropped on draft day and a player who decries anonymous sources left and right. I mean, he's leaking information via anonymous source to punish the team. I don't think we absolutely have to watch his emotions during the game because we know how he feels about the Packers. We know how he feels about management. So when things get bad, when things aren't going the way he wants, how is he going to respond to that adversity in the moment? It wasn't pretty there down in Jacksonville against the Saints. And I think that we're going to be watching every move of his the rest of the way. Do things change? Maybe. We've seen this before. You know, he's had clunkers before. He's responded. This just feels different. This just feels like it's a harder funk to get out of because we really know big picture what he thinks about the organization.
After the offseason that Aaron Rodgers had, that clunker of an opening day was unacceptable. And I don't say this with any hate for Aaron Rodgers. I'm a guy that is a big fan of Rodgers. And I love when Rodgers is scintillating and breaking open defenses and throwing beautiful passes downfield and, you know, kind of showing us why he's one of the most talented quarterbacks in NFL history. But last week is unacceptable. Because if you are going to spend the offseason with a middle finger up to your organization and you are going to try to get the general manager fired, and you are going to dance and party and vacation in Hawaii, and you're not going to show up to OTAs, and you're not going to show up to mini camps, and you're going to try to rally your wide receivers against the organization, and you're going to do all the things that is, I deserve more as a message. I'm good enough. I'm great enough. I'm worthy enough that I deserve more. If you're going to try out for Jeopardy, if you're going to do all the things he did, including going behind the podium and explaining why he was so angry at the Packers and how things had not gone his way and how he deserved better, well, then you can't come out of that offseason and do that. Look that awful. Because then your credibility is out the window. Then the whole message of I deserve better looks ridiculous because you play like garbage. So I thought out of all of the things that were roiling around the Packers this year, Rodgers, Gutekunst, the offense, will he be traded? Is this the last year, Jordan Love? That really the most important takeaway so far has been Rodgers believes he's better than he is. And I know that's kind of crazy to say because we're talking about a top 10 quarterback of all time. But if Rodgers believes he deserves more, that the Packers, that he deserves more from the Packers, the Packers need to do more for him, that they've shortchanged him, week number one, coming out of the offseason, you've got to play like a great quarterback. You've got to prove on the football field that you are what you've been trying to message the Packers and the football world. If you're so great that they should listen to you more, coaches, tight ends, wide receivers, personnel, offense, play calling schemes, what have you, well, you can't play like that. You can't be hot garbage on a neutral site in week number one, or else you look like a clown. And I know that this week has been, oh, no big deal. You know, I got hit below the belt on that first interception. We'll be fine. But, Aaron, you look like a clown if you spend the entire offseason telling everybody that'll listen how you deserve more and then come out and play like trash. Those two things don't synchronize. And again, I say this as an Aaron Rodgers fan, as a guy that has always rooted for Aaron Rodgers and has absolutely taken runs at Mike McCarthy in the front office and not spending enough, etc. I can't defend you if you're going to flap your gums all offseason, stay away from camp, be in Hawaii, try out for Jeopardy, etc., and say, they're not doing enough for me. And then you come out and you lay that egg. I can't defend that. And finally, we had Chad Pennington on the show earlier in the week. Now, Chad was a first-round draft pick, of course, of the New York Jets. And the Jets are dealing with trying to build around Zach Wilson right now. Now, Chad Pennington had a good NFL career, but the Jets never made that Super Bowl that they've been waiting for, that they've been hoping for since Joe Namath more than 50 years ago. So I asked Chad, you've been in this role here. You've been drafted by the Jets. You've been the savior, quote-unquote. What do the Jets need to do to support Zach Wilson? Here's Chad Pennington.
I think the key is, from an organizational standpoint, making sure that they are continuing to put better people around him, that they have the right development plan for him, and that there's patience involved. No rookie quarterback is just going to come out there and set the world on fire from the get. There's going to be ups and downs. You even saw it throughout the game yesterday where you just see rookies playing as rookies. They'll have some great plays. They'll have some not so great plays. They'll have some plays where the timing is just a little bit off as they learn the timing of the NFL and how things come open. And so for Zach, I think it's really about the total process for him as an individual and for the Jets as an organization to make sure over the next 3 years that they do everything they can in their power to make sure he's getting better as an individual and that the team in general and the culture in general is getting better around him, because it certainly, you can see that there is talent there. You can see that he has a great upside, but there's so many factors involved in making sure that the quarterback can be successful.
I think that's important to remember, that we put all of this pressure, all these expectations on young QBs to be the saviors, to be the man, to be the thing that changes the fortunes of a franchise. But ultimately, it can't only be on them. Of course, the quarterback will make other players better if he's great, but you also have to surround him with talent. Let's go back to Peyton Manning, 1998. You know, he's drafted number one overall, obviously, by the Indianapolis Colts. He's kind of a transcendent college football quarterback. Everybody kind of knew he was a franchise guy waiting to happen. But what do the Colts do? They don't surround him with garbage talent. The Indianapolis Colts drafted Marvin Harrison, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. They drafted Edgerrin James, a Pro Football Hall of Famer. They drafted Reggie Wayne, a potential Pro Football Hall of Famer. Of course, Peyton Manning makes those guys look better. And of course, those guys' numbers are improved because of Peyton Manning's greatness. But you can't not give guys that are great talent around them, or else you're shortchanging them, and the Jets have to do more than just draft Zach Wilson. That'll do it for us this morning here on the show. Thanks to Connor Green, executive producer of Sunday Morning Football. Thanks to Anthony Pierno on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Kevin Dexter on your headlines. And thanks to JP back here at the Ticket in Boise, Idaho. I will see you tomorrow morning on my show. Enjoy football, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.